Now it's time for the Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. This is your weekly informative hour all about eyes. Learn about cataracts, ask a question about glaucoma, find out how diabetes affects your eyes. Stay tuned for an entertaining and educational program about eyes and eye care. Call in to have your questions answered by the doctor. Now, your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Good morning, everyone. It's time once again for our regular weekly program about eyes and eye care. It's called the Hawaiian Eye Show, and it's sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. We're going to be here for the next hour talking about glasses and bifocals, about laser beams and eye surgery. We can talk about your cataracts or your contacts, itchy eyes, droopy lids, or whatever it is that interests you. If you'd like to join in today, give us a call. Our phone number is 521-8383. We're happy to hear your experiences and answer your questions, so feel free to give a call. If you can't call in today, or maybe you're feeling shy, you can always email your questions to us. Our email address is eyes@hawaiianeye.com, and we can answer those questions over the air in coming weeks. Look us up on the web while you're online at www.hawaiianeye.com. You can also follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com and looking for Dr. Tortora, D-R-T-O-R-T-O-R-A. And Facebook.com/Hawaiian Eye Center, and you get updated information on what's going on at the center. During the next hour, we'll discuss eye news from around the country and around the world. Sometimes we'll do an eye quiz to test your IQ, and we'll have a lot of fun today. Remember, all opinions expressed on this program are those of myself and the other medical doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center. I'm an ophthalmologist, or IMD, which means I'm a medical doctor who specializes in the eyes. Now we're going to try to be very consumer-oriented today, make an effort to give you the best possible practical advice. But remember, I can't see through the telephone, so I may have to recommend an examination before I can tell you exactly what's going on in your eyes. Hawaiian Eye Center does sponsor our program today as a public service, so sit back, relax, and enjoy an hour all about eyes. So talking about needing an eye exam before we can tell you what's going on in your eyes, I want to talk a little bit about what's involved in an eye examination, because people come in all the time for an eye examination, and sometimes they've had one before and sometimes they haven't, but they don't always know what to expect. And even if they do know what to expect, they don't always know why we're doing what we're doing. So let me go through the basic elements of an examination of the eyes, and then we'll talk about some of the things that we look for and some of the things that we find, and what we can do about certain conditions when we run into them in an eye examination. So for example, let's see, when you first come in for a complete eye examination, the thing that we want to know is we want to know what's the best potential vision of your vision, of your eyes. In other words, are your eyes working properly? Are all the structures in the eyes working the way they should? Or is there some kind of a problem or defect or difficulty or disease that may be limiting your vision? So not everyone sees to their best potential all the time. Some people need glasses for the very clearest vision. As a matter of fact, most of us, to get the very clearest vision our eyes are capable of, need some slight correction of the focus. And so we'll call that glasses, contact lenses. Laser correction can be done to bring the eyes into that focus. But when you come in for an examination, what we want to do is we want to learn what the best vision your eyes are capable of is. And we do this through a test called a refraction. A refraction means putting different lenses up in front of your eyes in a way that's prescribed in a certain technique that tells us, with the best correction, with the best focus, what is your eye's best possible vision. Okay, we call that best corrected visual acuity. That's something we want to know. Why do we want to know that? Well, if you have good vision without glasses, that's great. But if you have good vision but glasses corrects that, then that means, maybe nothing may be wrong with the eye whatsoever, other than the focus is a little bit off. But if you have a vision which is limited or poor, even with the best possible focus, with the best correction, so your best corrected visual acuity is less than 20/20, let's say, then we know that there's something going on in the eye that's keeping you from seeing as well as we'd expect. And then our job as ophthalmologists, and optometrists do the same type of thing, is to make sure that we understand how come your vision is not as good as it could be, as its potential could be. So it's not as good as it could be or should be. So checking the eyes, checking the eye health, the first step is figuring out what your best potential vision is. Now, doing a refraction test is the ideal way to do this because this usually uncovers the fact of whether you're nearsighted or farsighted or have astigmatism or somehow that glasses or contact lenses for even might correct your vision or might improve your vision. So when we figure out your best possible vision, then we can also say, well, we can give you glasses to improve the vision. But sometimes we need to do it even when you're not interested in glasses. Sometimes when you don't even need glasses, we still need to do this refraction test. Sometimes we can get similar information with a quicker test called a pinhole test. So we'll put little tiny pinholes in front of your eyes and have you peek through those. And if your need for glasses is a relatively small one, the pinhole should give us approximately the same correction that you'd have with best correction with vision with glasses. But if the need for glasses is significant, then the pinhole test is not going to give us accurate information about what your best corrected vision is. So we generally like to do the refraction test to find out best corrected visual acuity. Now, this sometimes causes a little bit of controversy in the office because most insurance companies don't cover the refraction test. It's considered a non-covered service, which means the patient can be charged directly for it in the patient in the doctor's office. So patients say, well, that's the glasses test, isn't it? I don't need the glasses test because I'm not looking for glasses. I just want you to tell me if my eyes are healthy or not. And so then we have to explain to them that, yes, well, in order to determine whether your eyes are healthy or not, we need to figure out whether glasses make your vision better. And so, you know, it's the chicken or the egg thing. Well, I don't need glasses, so I don't need a glasses test. But yeah, you may not need glasses, but if you need a glasses, but the glasses test helps us figure out whether you need something else besides glasses, right? So the refraction test is the first thing we do, and that's why we do it. And that's when they put a, usually put a machine in front of your eye. It looks like a big two ears side by side, and two round circles kind of merged together. And those circles contain lenses that allow the doctor or the refraction technician to go ahead and check to see whether the vision improves with different types of lenses. And rather than holding up one lens and then holding up a different lens and all of this, it just becomes easier to use the machine that has all these potential lenses in it. And you just kind of click from one lens to the next within the machine. And then the patient sees whether that improves their vision or not. So that's when they generally have you read the eye chart, put some lenses in front of your eyes, change the lenses and say what's better, one or two. And that's called a refraction test. Okay. So once we've determined what the best corrected vision is, then we can go on to figure out whether there's any other pathology, whether there are any other problems associated with the eyes or the area around the eyes. So the first thing we do is look at the eyelids, and we look to make sure that the lids are not droopy or turning in or turning out, or there are no lumps or bumps or skin cancers around the eyelids. And then we'll go ahead and look at the surface of the eye. And to do this, we generally use a machine called a slit lamp microscope. A slit lamp microscope is a special instrument for examining the eyes that has a device that holds your chin in place and allows you to keep your head stable or steady while we shine a light on your eyes and use a magnification or microscope to look at the surface of the eyes. Generally, the magnification that we use to look at the eyes is somewhere between 10 and 16 power, 10 and 16 times power. And that allows us to see most of the details on the surface of the eye quite well. After we've looked at the surface of the eye and examined the conjunctiva, which is the thin vascular membrane on the surface of the eye, when you have conjunctivitis or pink eye, that becomes red. It makes your whole eye look red. Conjunctiva is the thin superficial level. It has a lot of blood vessels in it, which is why that's what makes the eye look red, because blood is what makes it look red. And if the blood vessels are dilated or enlarged, that makes it look red. If the blood vessels are shrunken or smaller, then it doesn't look as red, it looks more white. Underneath that conjunctiva tissue is the sclera, that's the white of the eye. And so the white of the eye is not usually what turns red. The red is the superficial layer above the white of the eye called the conjunctiva. So just remember, if you've heard the term conjunctivitis, it's an inflammation of the conjunctiva. Then we look at the cornea, which is the clear window on the surface of the eye, kind of like the crystal on a watch that covers the eye and protects it and focuses light, but doesn't. But you don't usually see it because it's clear. It's optically clear, and it needs to be optically clear to do its job. So we look for clarity of the cornea. We look for any diseases or processes that might be affecting the cornea. And then we look inside the eye. We look in the front part of the eye, which we call the anterior chamber. Anterior means front, chamber, portion, room. The front portion of the eye is the anterior chamber. And then we look at the lens of the eye. We look for things like cataracts, cloudiness of the lens, position of the lens. Make sure that the lens is in good position through some injury or something. You haven't pushed that lens out of position for some reason. And then we look into the back of the eye. We use a special lens, special instrument to see in the back of the eye because it needs to focus light better on the back of the eye. And when we look at the back of the eye, we look at the retina, the seeing tissue inside the eye. We look at the vitreous gel, the clear, optically clear gel that fills the inside of the eye. And we look at the optic nerve and blood vessels. The optic nerve carries the vision back to the brain, but certain disease processes, such as glaucoma, can affect the optic nerve. So optic nerve, retina, macula, which is the part of the eye responsible for the sharpest central vision, is very important to look at as well, because oftentimes if the visual acuity is not perfect, then sometimes reason is because of pathology or changes in that macula. All right, we're going to take a short break. When we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about the eye exam and move along onto some eye news.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
Life has never looked better with Hawaiian Eye Center.
The Hawaiian Eye Show phone lines are now open. Give us a call at 521-8383 with your questions for the doctor. If you're calling from the neighbor islands, call us toll-free at 888-565-8383. Now, back to your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Can you see me now? Hawaiian eyes, can you see me lost?
All right, here we are in the second segment of the Hawaiian Eye Show. If you do have a question for us, you can give us a call. 521-8383 is the number to call. I've come across a few articles during the week which have some interest. And we see an article here about the coffee-glaucoma connection. It says here, a study performed at Massachusetts Eye and Ear Infirmary was designed to analyze the effect of caffeine, particularly that found in coffee, on pressure inside the eye and other factors that affect glaucoma. So primary open-angle glaucoma was present in 22 of the patients studied, and 18 had what we call normal pressure glaucoma, and 25 were healthy participants. So what they did is they looked at whether drinking a cup of coffee, it was a certain amount of caffeine in that coffee, whether that caused a change in the pressure in their eye and in other factors that might be related to glaucoma. So it actually turns out that the pressure in the eye and the perfusion pressure to the optic nerve both increased temporarily in patients who drank coffee, in people who had glaucoma. And so the question is whether that's something to be concerned about or not, whether glaucoma patients should be counseled or advised not to drink coffee. The study participants thought that the rise in pressure was too small and too short-lasting to really be a significant factor in glaucoma patients. So this is their analysis. It says caffeine consumption is widespread, with 80% of U.S. adults age 45 or older consuming caffeine daily. Worldwide, the most common source of caffeine is coffee, which the average American adult consumes 3.5 cups of daily. Wow, 3.5 cups of coffee a day? You guys are drinking a lot of coffee out there. Given that the consumption of coffee is a modifiable lifestyle factor that may be affecting the progression of glaucoma, recent attention has turned to studying a possible connection. Previous studies have had controversial results, with some reporting a correlation between caffeine and a rise in eye pressure, which may affect glaucoma, whereas others have shown the contrary. Only two studies have looked at ocular perfusion pressure in addition to intraocular pressure. Therefore, this particular study was a unique, well-controlled study with the largest group of people to date. It was designed to figure out not only the effect of caffeine on the studied indicators, but also how five different subgroups of patients responded. So they looked at the different subgroups, people who had glaucoma, people who had a different form of glaucoma, and people who had no glaucoma, in order to figure out how people's eyes behaved with caffeine ingestion. It says, although the data were very thorough, some limitations of the study include the fact that only white patients were studied. Applicability to other populations needs to be analyzed further. Similarly, only one cup of coffee with a fixed dose of caffeine was studied. There may be a dose-dependent effect, and future studies may need to include different amounts of caffeine to appreciate more significant effect on these parameters. Overall, given the high prevalence of glaucoma as well as the abundance of coffee drinkers, the relationship between intraocular pressure, ocular perfusion pressure, etc., to coffee ingestion is particularly important. This study found that in glaucoma patients, pressures increased after caffeinated coffee intake. However, it's not clear whether this is going to have an effect on glaucoma progression. Okay, so it's an interesting study, shows a little increase in eye pressure due to drinking caffeine. So for people who have really advanced glaucoma and the stage, as we call it, glaucoma, it may be a good idea to ask them to limit their caffeine intake. But for the vast majority of people who have glaucoma, it probably is not a big factor. Okay, so there's an interesting news story. Glaucoma and caffeine, is there a relationship? Perhaps. Okay, what else do we have? We have a story here about dry eyes and their association with laser vision surgeries. You know, one of the things that has been talked about a lot in the eye field is whether having your vision corrected with a laser vision correction procedure is likely to also give you other types of problems. And the most common one that's talked about is a dry eye condition. Now, the eyes require a thin layer of moisture, what we call the tear film, in order to see clearly and function properly and be comfortable. And for people who have dry eyes, they can suffer with a poor vision or fluctuating vision. They can have certainly discomfort, significant discomfort, irritation, scratchiness, soreness of the eyes. All of those things are quite common after laser vision correction, perhaps if laser vision correction is causing dry eyes. So this study was looking at different types of laser vision correction procedures to see whether there might be a difference in the effect on the surface of the eye and on the moisture, the dryness or moistness, I guess, of the surface of the eye with different types of laser correction. As you may know, there are procedures ranging from LASIK to PRK, which use the laser in a little bit different way in order to reshape the surface of the eye and create a new focus and improve people's vision, reduce their need for eyeglasses. And depending on how that technique is done, does that perhaps have an effect on the side effect of dry eyes after this type of procedure? So that's what this study is looking at. So it says here, the headline is dry eye risk similar after laser vision surgeries. It says here, two laser surgeries used to correct blurry vision have a similar chance of causing dry eyes, at least temporarily, according to a new study. Doctors have long known that dryness can be a side effect of laser-assisted in situ keratomyelitis, better known as LASIK, and of photorefractive keratectomy, better known as PRK. But the conventional wisdom has been that people who already have dry eyes may be better off with PRK because it's thought to maybe have a lower risk than LASIK of making the dry eyes worse. In the new study, however, that was not the case. Patients gave similar ratings to their post-op dryness regardless of the procedure, and in either case, the symptoms went away within a year. Our study suggests that both procedures have a similar effect on postoperative dry eye findings, said Dr. Edward E. Manchi, professor of ophthalmology at Stanford University Medicine in California. This has been my clinical experience as well, he added. Dr. Manchi's team also found that the two procedures carried a similar chance of another temporary side effect, the feeling of having a foreign body in the eye, which may, by the way, be related to the dryness issue. Foreign body sensation is often related to a dryness issue. So they found that using whether you do corrective procedure to reduce your need for eyeglasses, either with LASIK or with PRK, that the risk for developing dryness of the surface of the eyes is fairly similar in both of these corrective surgeries, both LASIK and PRK. So since it was introduced to the U.S. in the 1990s, LASIK has become by far the most commonly used surgical technique for correcting nearsightedness, farsightedness, and astigmatism. Dr. Manchi said the LASIK accounts for about 85% of procedures and PRK for the other 15%. So PRK can be an option for people who cannot undergo LASIK because of certain factors, such as thinning of the cornea, the surface of the eye. Both procedures improve vision by using a laser to reshape the middle layer of the cornea, the transparent membrane that domes over the pupil. The basic difference in what happens is to the outer layer of the cornea. So LASIK and PRK differ in how the outer layer of the cornea is treated, and they differ a little bit in the healing process. And so it doesn't seem like this particularly makes a difference so much in the dry eye factors. So I guess that's not something, if you're considering laser vision correction, that you need to worry too much about the difference between LASIK and PRK. So go with what your doctor recommends, since it doesn't look like the dry eye symptoms anyway are improved or worsened one way or the other by one procedure versus the other. Let's see what else we have as far as eye news stories here. We also do have open phone lines here. If you want to give us a call and you're listening Saturday morning, if you're up early on a Saturday morning or on your way here or there and you want to give us a call to ask a question that you've had about eyes, you can reach us here at the studio. 521-8383 is the number to call. And we also do have a toll-free number to call from the neighbor islands if you'd like to write that down. It's 1-888-565-8383. So 521-8383 here on Oahu. And we're happy to try to answer your questions about eyes. Let's see. It says here, here's another story about glaucoma. Glaucoma being a condition where pressure in the eye damages the optic nerve and affects the vision, starting with the side or peripheral vision and eventually affecting the central vision as time goes on. This particular study looked at 192 glaucoma patients who had a range of visual field peripheral vision defects compared to several staging systems in glaucoma, visual field staging systems, and then they compared that with patients' actual ability to perform activities of daily living, so what they call ADLs, activities of daily living, and the self-reported quality of life. They found the amount of visual field loss and the status of the better eye most accurately predicted functional ability and quality of life in glaucoma. However, factors affecting functional disability are difficult to quantify, and more study may be required. So that just means that if you have glaucoma, the more advanced it is, the more difficult it may be to get around and to do the things you need to do. So we've got to catch it early and treat it early. Let's go to the phones. We've got Don standing by in Kaneohe. Hi, Don. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Doc. I called you before. I have RP, and I go to my doctor, and they do the field test, and they also do this test, I guess a retina scan. How safe is that? Is that like a dose of radiation when they look in the back of the eye?
No, that's an optical test. It's just done. It's just done with light, yeah, and sometimes laser light, but it's nothing that is going to cause any damage to the eye, as far as we know.
So that just shows you the back of the eye, what's going on in the back?
Yeah, it's basically just a picture. It's like seeing a picture, but it's done with light because you can see in the eye. The eye is optically clear, so we use light to image the back of the eye rather than having to use X-rays or other kinds of radiation.
Uh-huh. And then concerning, I have a friend that has macular wet macular and she's taking shots. How critical is that shot? Can it be damaging if you take too many of those shots in the eye?
The current evidence suggests that the shots are the only way to maintain it, and they need to be done every month for long term, maybe 2 years, maybe 5 years, maybe lifetime.
Uh-huh.
And so, yes, each shot carries with it a small risk, a risk of infection or other problems, but without the shots, the likelihood is the condition would continue to get even worse than what it currently is.
Yeah, she always gets pain when she takes that shot. Yeah. Well, she's in her 90s, so...
Yeah, she should definitely let her doctor know that she's getting pain, see if there's anything they can do to make it more comfortable.
Oh, okay. Hey, thanks a lot. You have a good weekend.
All right, you too. Aloha. Okay, let's take a short break for the news, and then we'll be right back.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Their experienced surgeons have extensive cataract and general eye care experience. And they proudly welcome their newest eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen Ree. Dr. Ree brings a wealth of experience to the Hawaiian Eye Center team. To schedule an appointment with a member of the eye care team, call Hawaiian Eye Center today at 733-2020 or visit the website at hawaiianeye.com.
The news authority in Honolulu is... News Radio, 830 KHVH.
It's 75 degrees, partly cloudy in Honolulu. I'm Julia Norton Dennis. Here's what's happening. President Barack Obama says Republicans are dead wrong in calling America a country in decline. He told supporters in Seminole, Florida today that the U.S. is still an engine of ingenuity and the envy of the world. Obama pledged to make education more affordable, reduce dependence on foreign oil, and slash deficits without sticking it to the middle class. Senator John McCain says it's the job of presidents and candidates to lead and articulate their vision for America's role in the world. And he says he's disappointed there hasn't been more discussion of foreign policy in the presidential campaign. McCain says the situation in Syria and elsewhere cries out for American leadership. The Arizona Republican spoke to the Associated Press at a gathering of political and business leaders in Italy. Inmate visits at Oahu Community Correctional Center have been suspended since August 11th because of a shortage of guards and the need to cut down on overtime. Department of Public Safety spokeswoman Tony Schwartz says the warden is assessing staffing levels and will try to resume visitations this weekend. Schwartz says cancellations are usually just a day here and there. This month-long cancellation is unusual. An armored car company employee responsible for restocking ATMs pleaded not guilty yesterday in court to stealing $73,000 from Hickam Federal Credit Union machines between February 2008 and August 2011. Trial for 65-year-old Stephen Dugley is set for November 6th. Police are looking for a man they believe is responsible for five different armed robberies. He was captured on surveillance video. He's between 30 and 46 feet tall, weighing between 160 and 200 pounds. Mostly sunny, high in the mid-80s, partly cloudy tonight, low near 73, and tomorrow partly sunny, currently 75.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers you complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Advanced technology lenses are designed to provide good vision for distance, near and in between, with less dependence on eyeglasses. When cataracts blur vision, a short, painless procedure helps. If you have a cataract and want back youthful vision, call Hawaiian Eye Center at 733-2020 or visit hawaiianeye.com.
The phone lines are now open at 521-8383. On the neighbor islands, it's a free call, 1-888-565-8383. And now, here's Dr. Christopher Tortora.
All right, welcome back. And here we are in the second half of the Hawaiian Eye Show. We're talking about eyes. Of course, it is the Hawaiian Eye Show. And if you have a question about eyes, we do have open phone lines. It's 521-8383. We broadcast live on Saturday mornings. And we're rebroadcast on Saturday evenings. And then you can always find us on the web at hawaiianeye.com. You can check out radio shows from the past several weeks, the past several months. And you can also subscribe to a podcast of the radio show if you don't always get to listen to it when it happens. You can get our podcast and listen when you want. And that's the great thing about technology. We can take things with us now that we used to have to tune into at a certain time. I remember my mother telling me stories about having to crowd around the radio to listen to a certain broadcast of a certain type of a certain program at a certain time. And then I remember as a kid having to crowd around the TV at a certain time because that's when the programs were on. And then we got we were able to record TV, and then we got DVR, and now we have DVR, and the cable company does it for you itself, and then you get now we have podcasts. So now we can listen to things or watch things on our own time. So check out our podcast, HawaiianEye.com. Click on the radio show button, and you'll find access to subscribe to a podcast of the Hawaiian Eye Show. We were talking a little bit earlier in the program about eye examinations, what's involved in an eye examination, what we do when we check your eyes, and we talked about figuring out what the best potential vision of your eye is, and then going ahead and looking at the different structures to determine whether there's anything that's going on that's affecting your eye, that's affecting your vision. And so we look at the different elements of different things that go go into making the eye healthy. And so I talked about looking at the eyelids, and then I talked about looking at the surface of the eye, but I didn't talk about another system in the eyes which is sometimes a source of trouble, of irritation of the eyes, and that is what's called the lacrimal system. You know, our eyes need to be bathed in a thin layer of moisture at all times, and tears are that layer of moisture. And there's also systems for protecting our eyes from things that might get into the eye or things that might be an irritant to the eye, and that's where we get what we call reflex tears. So typically what happens is you make tears in your eyes. You make what we call basal tears, the tears that just sit there and coat the surface of the eye. And a lot of people have issues with that as they get older and they get what we call dry eyes, and there are different things we can do to treat that. But sometimes you get a lot of what's called reflex tearing. And reflex tearing occurs when something goes in your eye, for example, and all of a sudden your eye is tearing and burning and sore and a lot of tears gushing out, and or you have a scratch on the surface of the eye, you get a lot of tears, a lot of tearing, and then your eyes tear and your nose gets stuffy, and all of that stuff occurs as a result of the excessive tearing in your eyes. And so some people are bothered by abnormalities in the tear system, in the tear production system, what we call the tear production and tear drainage. So there's several ways that tearing can affect people, and several things that can cause tearing, and different things that we do about it depending on what was causing it. Okay, so you're constantly making tears. You're making fluid to coat the surface of the eye, and those tears are draining out of your eye through two little openings on the inside corners of the eyelids, one on the upper lid, one on the lower lid. We call those the puncta, little points. Puncta means point. Points in Latin, I think. And so the puncta are little points on the surface of the eyelid. And if you look really closely at the inside corner of your eyelid, the upper or the lower lid, you'll see like a little area where it comes to a slight little point. And that's in that area, if you can see really well, if you're really good close-up vision or use a magnifying glass, you can see that there's a tiny little opening at that, right at that point, and that's where tears drain out of your eye through the puncta. They go into a canal called the canaliculus. Canaliculus means canal. That's easy enough. And then the canaliculus kind of merges together into what's called a tear sac, and then from there they drain into the back of the nose and the throat. The nose and throat are, of course, connected. That's why if you have a runny nose, you sometimes feel it or taste it in your throat. So the tears, basically, when we We're making normal amounts of tears. We blink, the tears come out of the eyes, they go through the tear drain, and they leave the eye through the throat. You swallow the tears, basically. That's why when you put a drop in your eye, sometimes you can taste it in the back of your throat. That's why when you cry, you taste the saltiness in the back of your throat, because those tears are flowing into the back of your throat at a higher rate, and so it's triggering some of the taste buds there, which give you that salty sensation in your mouth, which is a hallmark of crying. Tearing. Now, some people get tearing just for no reason. They're not crying. They're not emotional. They don't get something in their eye. They just get tearing. And there are two reasons that you can get tearing. Some people call excessive tearing waterworks. And like any waterworks, it's just simple plumbing. So either you're making too much, so you got too much flow in, you're overwhelming the drain, or it can't drain fast enough. So think about it like the sink in your house, that if the sink starts backing up, you get extra tears in this case, then it's because either too much water is going in or too little is leaving. So the two different things, those are two different parts of the tearing spectrum. Now, making too many tears is probably a more common reason why people get excessive tearing. And you make too many tears because the eye perceives itself as being irritated. That can be because of actual irritation, getting something in the eye, or eyelash, or something flies into your eye, or you rub your eye, and the eye feels a little irritation, gets a little tearing. So that's one thing that can cause tearing, or it can be because of perceived or possible tearing. And that is because of that's the possible tearing, or the potential, or the reflex tearing can be because of the eye potentially feels like it could be irritated or like it is irritated, and that often occurs because the surface of the eye is dry. Now, if the eye is real dry, sometimes you make reflex tears to try to compensate for that dryness, to make extra tears to make it moist again. And so in that case, the reason you have wet eyes or have teary eyes is because the eyes are dry or dry to begin with. Or maybe because there's inflammation along the eyelids, or it may be because there actually is little bits of debris dropping into your eye, maybe from the inflammation on the eyelids, maybe from something else. And so if you're making too many reflex tears, often you can make that better by supplying the eyes with moisture, with tears. You can use some artificial tear drops in your eyes 4 or 6 times a day and restore the moisture to the surface of the eye, and then that will reduce the reflex tearing, so you won't get as much tearing. The other reason that people get tearing is because of a problem with the drain. Remember, I said it's either too much production, which is if you're making reflex tears, extra tears, or it's a poor drainage. And if the drain is closed or partially blocked, then that's going to lead to welling up of the tears in the eyes, and those tears don't have anywhere to go. So they kind of run down your cheeks, and you end up with tearing as a result of a blocked tear drain. If you have a blocked tear drain, it could be for a number of reasons. That blocked tear drain is very common as you get older. Many people have it, and sometimes it'll open up just with some medicine or some eye drops, but oftentimes it requires a surgical procedure to open up that tear drain to see if that if we can reduce the tearing by getting you a new tear drain that can be surgically constructed. A new tear drain can be reconstructed surgically, and most of the time, about 80-85% of the time, that helps reduce the symptoms of tearing, because that allows a new place for the tears to drain so that you don't get the backed up tears. Now, the other thing that can happen if your tear drain is blocked is, if you recall, I said that the tear drains out through two little openings on the inside corner of the eyelids. Those two openings go into tubes called the canaliculi that run in the inside part of the eyelids and then join together just below the inner part of the eye along the side of the nose. And where they join together, they create a little sac, a little open area where tears can pool or collect. And when the tear drain is blocked, tears tend to kind of pool or collect in that sac called the lacrimal sac. And when the lacrimal sac has a bunch of moisture in it, a bunch of tears in it, that's not going anywhere. It can't drain because it's blocked. And there may be influx, but there's no outward movement of the tears. Then sometimes that stagnant tear lake inside the lacrimal sac starts to go bad. It starts to turn sour. Bacteria get in there, they start growing, and those growing bacteria cause an inflammation infection in the tear sac. And that causes a problem called dacryocystitis. This generally results in a red, painful swelling of the area just under the eyelid, on one side or the other, where the tear drain is blocked. And if this dacryocystitis occurs, it's actually an infection. It needs to be treated with antibiotics. And with antibiotic treatment, it tends to resolve the infection, but you've still got that blockage there that puts you at higher risk to develop this type of infection in the future. So if someone has a blockage of the tear drain and they're prone to these infections, these are people that we do recommend that they have the tear drain opened surgically. Other people who are just bothered by a bit of tearing but haven't had an infection or other problem, then oftentimes we just let them go according to symptoms. You know, you say, this is bothering me. I think I'll have something done about it. Or it doesn't really bother me that much. Maybe I don't need anything done about it. So symptoms often govern whether people have surgery to open the tear drain. But if the tear drain is getting infected, if you're getting a dacryocystitis because of the blocked tear drain and the tear material just kind of sitting static in that sac inside the eyelid, then that is a reason to have that repaired, create a drain so that the fluid can drain out, so that it doesn't sort of just sit there and become sour and become infected. So that actually works fairly well in those cases to reduce the chance or the reoccurrence of a dacryocystitis or an infection of the tear drain. We're going to take a short break, and when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about some other interesting issues in ophthalmology. But I also want to take your call. So think about what you want to ask us about. Give us a call. 521-8383 is the number to call, and we'll take your call right after the break.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
With the latest technology, cataract care is often a fast, painless procedure with a rapid return to normal vision and normal activities.
It doesn't hurt. It just takes, 15, 20 minutes the most, and you're out. That's it.
We strive to make your procedure safe and painless. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
The phone lines are open at 521-8383. And from the neighbor islands, 1-888-565-8383. Now, back to Dr. Christopher Tortora, our host of the Hawaiian Eye Show.
All right, welcome back, everyone. And you're listening to the Hawaiian Eye Show. And we have only about 10 minutes left. So if you have something you'd like to talk to us about, now's the time to give us a call. 521-8383 is the number to call here on Oahu. If you're calling for the neighbor islands, you can call us toll-free, 1-888-565-8383. And we'll be happy to try to answer your questions. In the meantime, I want to go to some questions that have come in during the week. Oh, actually, before we go into the email questions, we do have a caller standing by. We have Jen standing by in Waikiki. Hi, Jen. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning. I just have about three quick things. I save articles, and this is 1999. It says childhood night light use could cause nearsightedness, but that, you know, it wasn't definitely proven, but this is just an article by a Dr. Quinn back in 1999, and a lot of parents, you know, leave the light on at night because the little kids are scared in the dark, and I wondered if you heard anything about that. And then second question, macular degeneration. My sister all of a sudden got it, I guess the leaking kind, the weeping kind, and she said she'd been taking that aspirin, little dose for years, but she had her legs operated on because I guess circulation, and they gave, was it Plavix? I tried to find the article. I got a stack of them. And that was when the trouble started, and she had one treatment, and it didn't work out so good. And then the third question, they always say, don't rub your eyes. And somehow rubbing is the only thing that seems to take away that itchy feeling. So just three questions.
Okay, well, maybe you better stay on the line because I don't know if I can remember all three, but three at once. But okay, the first one was about nightlights, and you said that you'd seen that article back in 1999, and that's interesting because I read that those articles too because my son was born in 1998, and so of course we were concerned about whether leaving the nightlight on would be an issue or not. And that is interesting that you bring that up because I really haven't seen anything more done to evaluate whether that's really an issue or not. At the time, what the concern was they said that kids tended to develop more nearsightedness if they were in a lighted room at night more so, and than kids who were in a dark room, who slept in a dark room. And there were some theories about why that might be the case, but I have not heard anything since then about whether that's been supported by future studies or anything else. So interesting you brought that up. I'll try to look that up and see if I can find anything more. The second thing you said was whether aspirin and Plavix might have a role in macular degeneration.
Right,
I think that
right.
was your question. Okay. I don't think so. There is really, as far as I know, there's no evidence that that either aspirin or any blood thinners would increase the risk of macular degeneration. I can't think of a reason why they would. Of course, wet macular degeneration means that there's bleeding, and so you think, well, things that might make you bleed more might cause more of a problem, but the type of bleeding is really more like oozing or leaking of the blood vessels, and I don't think that this is really associated with any of the blood thinners, so I don't think there's any association there. I think macular degeneration occurs. There probably are risk factors that we don't know about. The only ones that we do know about are smoking, so people who smoke are higher risk for macular degeneration.
She smoked.
Yeah, okay. And age, which is obviously is a factor because as you get older, the macular degeneration becomes more common. So maybe, you know, if she still smokes, then she should stop smoking. But other than that, you know, she just needs to go through the treatments. And your third question, I knew I would probably forget one of the questions.
Rubbing your eyes. I rub my eyes because it's the only thing that stops. But the doctors always say, don't rub your eyes.
Yeah, we don't recommend you know, vigorous rubbing of the eyes because you can do harm to your eyes if you press too hard on them. But you know, some people just sort of gently rub their eyes or not really hard rubbing their eyes. And I don't think there's any harm with that unless there's something specifically that you've had done with surgery on your eyes that would prevent that. But most routine cataract surgeries and other things would not be a problem as far as eye rubbing once it's healed. The only thing that I would recommend for you instead of rubbing your eyes is maybe cool compresses and followed by, you know, cleaning the eyelids and the eyelashes, because sometimes the eyes are itchy because of inflammation along the base of the eyelashes. And if you can clean the base of the eyelashes on a regular basis, sometimes warm compresses actually work better for cleaning the eyelids, but cool compresses help reduce the itching. So you could try either hot compresses or cold compresses and see which one seems to work better when your eyes are itchy rather than rubbing them, and then you could try to avoid that.
Well, thank you very much. That answers all my three concerns.
Okay, good. Thanks for your call. Aloha. All right, we have an off-the-air caller as well that has is too shy to talk on the phone but has asked what exactly is surgery for droopy eyes. And I'm assuming that what they're referring to is drooping of the eyelid, which is called ptosis. It's ptosis is a condition where the eyelid hangs down or droops, and there can be several causes for ptosis. It can be caused by a nerve problem, and that could represent a more serious problem going on elsewhere in the body. And in that case, it ought to be investigated. So if someone has a new onset of a droopy eyelid, that needs to be checked out or investigated by a physician, by the family physician or by the eye doctor. And if that turns out to be just a droopy lid related to age or related to something else, then there are things that can be done to repair that, that can be lifted surgically. So most commonly, as you get older, the both lids droop together. And so most people who have one droopy lid who need to have it repaired usually need to have both droopy lids repaired. There are a couple of ways of doing that. The most common way is to try to strengthen the muscle that lifts your eyelid. And there's a muscle called the levator muscle. Levator in Latin means lifting. So it's the muscle that lifts the eyelid. And so the lifting muscle, the levator muscle, may be weak. And if that is weak, then strengthening it with surgical treatment can be helpful in lifting the eyelid a little bit. When we lift the eyelid, that would generally involve an incision on the eyelid. It's usually an outpatient procedure, in and out the same day. Usually recovery is fairly fast. People are usually have their stitches out after about a week or so, and are usually back to normal activities within a week or two after the procedure, sometimes sooner. The eyelid surgery, as I said, is usually done on both sides to try to look symmetrical. The downside of eyelid surgery is that in many people, as they get older and their lids start drooping, it actually performs a protective effect. It keeps the eyelid, the eye opening to the eye, more narrow. And although that limits your vision a little bit, it also prevents drying of the surface of the eye. And as we talked about before, dryness of the surface of the eye is a common problem as you get older. And so if that drying of the surface of the eye is intensified or is increased because of the fact that the eyelid is not is more open. So when the eyelid is more open, there's more drying of the surface of the eye, more evaporation occurs. When that happens, that may make the symptoms of dryness of the surface of the eyes, the dry eye symptoms, that might make it a little bit worse. So dry eyes tend to get worse when the eyes are exposed to the air. The air has a drying effect on the surface of the eye. And what that means is that when you stare at something for a while, like when you're watching TV or looking at the computer or reading a book, you tend to be staring at what it is you're looking at because that helps you to be able to see what you're looking at. So we tend not to blink as often when we look at things, when we look at a book, when we read the computer, look at TV. And so that allows the surface of the eye to dry a little bit more. So people who have dry eyes often find that after they read for a while, the vision starts to get blurry. That's because the tear film is evaporating. And so that evaporation of the tear film is causing blurring of the vision. The way to avoid that is to think about taking little rest breaks now and then when you're reading or using the computer. Take a few seconds to close your eyes, blink your eyes, look away in order to help rest the eyes and reduce the drying, allow a re-lubrication of the surface of the eye because the blinking reflex spreads moisture over the surface of the eye. So take a break, rest frequently, follow the 20-20 rules every 20 minutes, take 20 seconds to look away, blink, and rest your eyes. We've been here for an hour now talking about eyes and eye care, and I've certainly had a lot of fun, and I hope you have too. I'd like to thank Will for helping out here in the studio, and I'd like to say thanks to all you listeners for making the show work through your calls and through your letters. If you enjoyed our program today, be sure to tell your friends about us, and if you learned something new, you can always listen again next week. If you have a question, you can email it to us. Our email address is eyes@hawaiianeye.com, and we can answer those questions over the air. Don't forget to check out our website at www.hawaiianeye.com. Subscribe to our podcast or listen to old radio programs. You can follow me on Twitter at Dr. Tortora, D-R-T-O-R-T-O-R-A, no spaces. And you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Hawaiian Eye Center. A lot of the latest news about eyes we end up posting on our Facebook page. The Hawaiian Eye Show is sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. I'm Dr. Christopher Tortora. Thanks so much for listening, and aloha.
You've been listening to the Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, with Harvard-trained eye surgeon Dr. Christopher Tortora. If you have an eye problem, want to get a second opinion, or aren't seeing as well as you used to, make an appointment with Dr. Tortora or one of the doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center in Central Oahu or Hilo by calling C-2020. That's 733-2020. Until next week, here's looking at you.
Life has never looked better with Hawaiian Eye Center.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
Coast to Coast AM, weeknights at 7 with George Norrie.
The whole universe is accelerating and speeding up.
On KHVH Honolulu,
Hawaii's home for Fox News.